Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And now, another episode of Rochester Peace Theater.
Whatever. Where's my mind?
No, that would have been
a long time ago. Wasn't thinking. Wow.
Well, we'll get started for you guys.
Okay, thanks, Camille. We've been working together since February, so...
Hey, we rib each other.
We totally rib each other.
He does it all the time.
Yeah,
not just me.
It's
more than
it's
I
your
do.
Fault.
That's
he says
true.
That I'm like a bottle with like lots of electric... What did you say? Like...
Fizz? Was it fizz or electrolytes
no,
or something?
No, I like fireworks, and then he has to put a cap on it.
Yeah. No, it's like, I said you're lightning in a bottle, where you're just like, I have the bottle, and I put the lightning in it, and it just moves all over and over and over and over, and so I have to release it sometimes, and then I have to put it back and be like, stop it!
That's you what guys sound like siblings. So I feel like this is what my...
Yes, we've developed a very sibling-like relationship. No, don't even try and hug me like to make it feel better because you're a nice, charming person. Can't touch me. I'm going to tell my boyfriend.
He'd be like, what
we could delete this or we could leave it in. Like, we have the option. I kind of want to leave it in.
I mean,
so it's... So give a primer to your boyfriend. But I'm really glad I was recording.
Well,
I like primers. Please let her know that I love her to death.
I think
She's
that's
great.
What makes the play so wonderful is that we have a good time together outside of the play during the process. Everything about it was just wonderfully developmental and raw and honest. And we talk about everything. You have to when you're dealing with Jim Crow laws and racism and all these
deep,
horrific, deep things.
Well, let's give a quick intro. So this is another edition of Rochester Peace Theater, and I am so honored to have Jamal James and Lisa Tharps in studio, who are part of the production The Royale, which is on the Fielding stage at Jiva Theater. And you kind of got a little bit of a primer, and I love... It's kind of... I was telling them off mic that I like to have... the actors give an idea of what the play is about, because I don't know what would or would not be said if you're trained in like what marketing wise you should say, but I always know not to give the punchline away in any sort of joke, so I let somebody else tell the joke typically, and then I'll just laugh in the audience.
Or not.
It could go either way. But it's been another banner season for Jiva, and they're closing out their Fielding stage series with The Royale, and this is a fantastic play, and it's about a boxer in like the most layman terms possible. It is about a boxer, but it's more than that, because it takes place in 1905 with Jay the Sport Jackson, and he is a African-American man who is excelling in a sport in the early 1900s, and it has to do with what Lisa was mentioning about Jim Crow laws and racism and kind of how... Well, I'll let you tell it, actually. Lisa, if you don't mind, would you mind introducing yourself and who you are in the play? And then we'll get to Jamal.
Hi, my name is Lisa. Hello. Now that I'm being recorded. My name is Lisa Tharps. I play Nina, which is Jay the Sport Jackson, Jay Jackson's sister in the play. I don't enter into the piece until the second half of the play. And yes, it was during a time where there was a lot of tension, a lot of friction between whites and blacks, or people of color at the time. And then you have this one gem of a being who wants to aspire to win and be the best boxer that he can be. And I guess in this case, the challenge being that the boxer who is the heavyweight champion is a white boxer. And as we know, Jay the Sport Jackson, Jack Johnson at the time, named Jack Johnson, is an African-American or black boxer. And so to watch his journey towards winning and achieving that greatness is... pretty much the essence of the play, and then all of the obstacles that surround it.
Right, because it seems that they come in every turn. So, Jamal, would you mind kind of giving us an intro to Jay and how he relates to you?
So, Jay Jackson is very close, near to dear to my heart, because I play him, but he's also based off the real-life boxer Jack Johnson, mm-hmm. who was the first African-American heavyweight boxing champion in the world. And what was so... weird or so transcendent about this man was that he didn't have any self-doubt whatsoever. He wasn't asking permission to be seen or to be heard or to mm-hmm. be someone who actually like is mattered or equal. He just did his own thing and people just got out of his way
right.
because he was so good. Mm-hmm. He learned so fast and so easy and he just beat everybody. He beat black people. He beat white boxers. He just beat everyone.
A bull.
Yes. He just charged everything. And with that, he got money and he got success and people were trying to take him down. But he just went throughout his life and the government had to make a law called the Mann Act, which was talking about him transporting white women across state lines for immoral purposes because he had a lot of white women following him as well as like prostitution back in the day.
Right.
And they had to, because he won, they had to change or make a law to try to put him in jail. That's how much white people did not want him to succeed. Now, our play doesn't actually talk about any of that. It's not about that kind of thing.
No, but it makes allusions to like his reputation, if you will.
Yeah.
It does kind of allude briefly to it.
Yes.
And if you blink, you'll miss it kind
yes.
of a thing.
Yeah. I would say that Jay is a little bit more self-conscious about his actions than the actual boxer Jack Johnson. Jack Johnson is more close to what O.J. Simpson would be called. Like O.J. Simpson was all about like, they would be like, you're a black icon. And he would be like, no, I'm not black. I'm O.J. Like right. I'm myself. Jack mm-hmm. Johnson was very much I'm myself. Yeah. Jay has a dilemma about like being a spokesperson for black people, but he doesn't think about him being that way. He's just like, I want to be the best because I matter.
He's not a black boxer.
Yes,
he's a boxer.
He's just a boxer, right. But he understands where he is, but he's more self-conscious about it.
It's interesting because he isn't until he is. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where Nina comes in, where she's kind of that...
Reminds him.
The mm-hmm. reminder. But it turns into, I think sometimes... Well, I know I've had the conversation because it's what kind of was an overarching theme for the second half of the play, like, and what Nina's character, I think, is based off of is a phrase, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. And I think she kind of relays that aspect of being a pioneer, if you will, for an African-American culture to be the best and to best whites and what it would mean if that happens for them back in the early 1900s. And it was kind of fascinating to watch because I was like, okay, well, this is, it's history, but it's presented differently, which is what I've always loved.
Right, yeah.
You know, very comical side note, it's kind of why Drunk History is so entertaining. The show Drunk History.
Yes.
Because you have people retelling history, but it's like you take out all the boring parts and you're like, did you know that this fascinating fact happened? Like, I didn't know that they made a law to try to put this man in jail. And it makes you wonder how many other people had laws made after them to stop them from doing something. Or mm-hmm. everybody, you know, like they're like, well, this one person is doing something. How do we make that stop that's going to affect everybody? And you don't think about that until you start doing the research on it.
Yeah. They really tried. Like, there's a documentary that I have actually in my room that I was gonna watch yesterday, but I fell asleep. I've seen it several times.
No judgment.
But it's really great. It's by Ken Burns, who like you know did the Civil Wars and everything. So
it's
good. It's like 4.5 hours. So yeah. It's a long documentary. Yeah. But like he would get so rich and so he had so much money that he would drive his cars really really fast, and police officers would stop him. And they would be like, oh, that's $100 when it would usually be a $50 ticket.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He'd be like, oh, I'll give you $150. And then he'd drive fast away from it. And then he'd go to the next town. They would still stop. And he just had money because he kept winning.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with him, the real life Great White Hope, Jim Jeffries, was a boxer who retired. And didn't want him, he didn't want to face Jack
right.
Johnson. So he retired, became an alfalfa farmer. And then Jack Johnson kept winning. And they asked him to come out of retirement, Jim Jeffries to come out of retirement. And he had a year to prepare for that. He lost like 100 pounds or something like that. And they expected him to like reclaim the white glory
yeah.
in boxing. And he lost in like round 6 or round 7. And from that time, like there were riots afterwards where black people got hurt and killed, and it was a triumphant time. But there was this idea of cost of trying to be triumphant as a black person. And funnily enough, we had a conversation in our first run in Ithaca,
mm-hmm.
where a woman asked a question about the New Zealand shootings.
Oh yeah,
and mm-hmm. she had said, "Do you think that was this play more difficult to perform today?" because with the shootings, because it was during that day. And I believe we were all like collectively, like we would think that it would be more important to do this kind of thing, that if people are going to die, whether you win or lose, it's more important that you win to strive towards something else, to get to a better place.
And that's a very Nina question.
Yes.
Like to who Nina is.
Strive towards equality.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good question.
Yeah. That is a very good question, but it's also, it's a question that Nina's character kind of plays on the fear of having that conversation as, you know, you're just like, but no, we have to do this. And she goes, but why? Because all these bad things will happen. And that's just a universal conversation of.
But these bad things are already happening. Yeah.
Correct.
And so in order to excel and move forward, so in order to achieve that equality, so that bad things no longer happen, you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah. And I think that's such a fascinating question to have been asked. You know, and to have a play that's so topical. And I always feel like Jeeva is like a psychic with the way that they present their seasons, because they pick their seasons long in advance. But every time they do, the topicality, I can't remember the word, but they're
well,
so...
I have to give props to Perron Yousefzadeh.
Yes.
Who brought that play.
Oh my gosh.
So Jeeva has a
Talk about
gift,
someone who loves that play. She loves that play.
She loves it. Yeah, she loves the play. And you can tell in just her direction how poignant it is to her to do that play and for all of us. But she's a great thinker, and it's just great to watch her and experience the work through her eyes.
She knows it so well that when she's like looking through the script, and then she'll like put it down, and she'll like, we'll be going through the scenes, she'll be like, no, you put a question mark where there's a period, or you put a period where there's, and I want an exclamation point. It's in the script. I love it that much. You need to put it like that. She's really adamant about punctuation and timing and character work in order to make this thing what it is,
because nothing is lost. Every moment is, and every action, it's a very movement oriented play, because it's, you're turning a boxing match, multiple boxing matches and training sessions, and putting it on a stage. Yeah. And to convey that, I always wondered, what is this going to look like? Because they build houses on the Wilson main stage, and then always the fielding stage, they've had a shipwreck there where they had an Odyssey retelling. And then now I'm like, okay, now we're going to have a boxing ring? Like, all right, dazzle me, kind of. Like, what do I get to expect next? And it was so fascinating to see the way that the play was set up and the choreography, the legitimate choreography that was involved in it that you just weren't expecting. So when like this clapping thing starts and the foot stomping, I'm like, are we clapping too? Like, and it was kind of like an audience participation almost, because of the way that it was being presented initially, that you're like, one of those like, do we start the slow clap? Like,
no, usually that's what happens. The audience claps at the beginning because they believe that, oh, we're supposed to clap for these boxers.
Right.
But then they realize that the clapping is actually part of the actual structure of the play. And there's things that's written in there for that.
There's sections that
we work on.
But mad props to Rocio Mendez, who applied the movement and the stomping. Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite parts, because you're like, oh, I would never. And it's so beautiful. So how did the choreography for that go? Because it does take a lot of, you're not always looking at the person that you're fighting necessarily. And I asked that because Nina actually has a role involved in the boxing match.
I want to say that it was fluid and everything worked perfectly from day one, but that's
no
not
dance.
What happened.
That is no ballet. What happened.
We had to figure
lots
it out.
Of
lots of rehearsing and a lot of
Continuity.
Stuff changed.
Yes.
A lot of stuff changed from the first 2.5 weeks of rehearsal to tech. And Rocio, as well as Perron, were trying to figure out what is the best presentation for all of the movements.
Right.
And there are different ways of doing the claps. Like in the script themselves, that it will say jab or hook or uppercut. And sometimes we clap to do all of those three instruments or to do all those three movements.
Right.
But Rocio was like, actually see all of those things.
Right.
There are productions that they'll just clap for every single movement.
No.
It won't be punches. And for her, she was like, let's try to do that. And Perron was like, yes, let's try to do that. So we're I feel like we're a little bit more physical than other past productions have been.
Okay.
Which is fine for Daz and I and for Lisa. I think we all are physically capable and are very in tune with our instruments in order to work out how to do that. Yeah. But it took a while.
But
it did take a while.
To be fair as well, I think it would... I can't imagine what this play would be like if you weren't making those movements, because to me, that's how I was conveyed where you are in the boxing match, like where the length of time has gone. You know, if you've seen a boxing match, you know that people get tired. And then if you see a big right hook that's going to knock somebody backwards, every movement was staccatoed with those clappings, and it got bigger the bigger the hit got.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that to me, I'm like, I would be a little bit more lost if I didn't have that guide of the choreography to be like, oh, nope, and that's how he's going down, you know, like, and there he is. And it wouldn't just be the movements. It was the louder the clap, the louder the stomp, the more intense the hits were.
And which is great, because it epitomizes the feeling of the play being a sport, a sport within the play, you know, the physicality and the reactions and all of those things, how the body is completely involved in the story. In telling the story as
Oh, yeah. I would have. I think it's such a different play because of that, because you just kind of are like, well, it's not just, you know, actors on a stage who are in wearing boxing gear. Which, by the way, did you get cold?
Let's talk about
the whole
that.
Play, no shirt on, which isn't a bad thing for some people in the audience, myself included. However, I did have to wonder. I was like, he must
I've gotten
be
some flattery. I've gotten some flattery over these past couple weeks. It's just great. It's awesome.
Because you look like a boxer. We'll just leave it at that.
In Ithaca, I was actually more colder there. In the kitchen theater than I actually am here. For some reason, the theater itself is a little bit more hot, and I think the lights are a little bit more hot themselves.
Yeah.
So I'm sweating a lot more, and I'm actually not cold.
The side lights.
Yeah, it's those side lights. Like, I'm just like warm the entire time. There are times when I'm just like, oh gosh, I know the scene's going on, but I need a towel. Yeah. I need something.
Like, by the end of the play, I'm even a little bit darker because I get a tan.
I just like
the lights are just
get out.
Well, so the play is, so for if you haven't gone to see it, but you really should, because it is such a simple, it's totally like a Joanna Gaines kind of thing for like those Fixer Upper fans, where it's the simple setup of, it's wood, like you would even call it shiplap, and then there's just these lights behind it that, again, help to every stomp. It kind of has a role in it. It sets a different type of scene. But I have worked within a production and done some stuff on a play and done stuff in TV and video production. Those lights stink. Like, they suck. They are hot and uncomfortable, and you're sweating by the end of it, and you don't realize you're sweating in places you didn't think you would sweat on because you're on TV. Mm-hmm. So with Jamal not having a shirt on and Nina being dressed in... you know, a full early 1900s kind of
it's
Victorian
a
garb.
It's beautiful.
You wear it really well. I was stunned when I saw it. I was like, can I look that good in something like that?
Well, it also supports, I think, for Nina, it supports this level of tension and discomfort within herself.
And her society.
So she carries this sort of, this weight of armor, you know, of resistance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and big chips on the shoulder just from her experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the lights are very helpful for her, I think.
Is it uncomfortable for you? Because you do have a very physical portion of the play.
Yeah. Well, I have this corset that I'm wearing.
Oh, my God. I wonder.
I'm battling with that corset every day.
She hates that corset.
I hate that corset.
Well, because women hate corsets.
Oh, I know.
Why do you think they were burning bras in the 60s and 70s? Because nobody wanted to be restricted like that.
A man must have created that corset. Yeah.
Funnily enough, I do understand that pain. I've worn a corset before, and I'm not going to tell you when.
Oh, really?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, well, we have to know this.
No, 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 no.
Oh, we have to know this.
Doesn't have to be on record on mic.
6'5".
I left that play behind.
Muscular. Wearing corset.
Did you have to wear really long boots for it too?
What?
Like a kinky boots kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't have to wear the boots.
He didn't have to wear the boots.
I didn't have to wear the boots.
He didn't have to, but he did.
Phrasing.
I didn't have to wear the boots.
But I just wanted, like, it has to be just as restrictive and uncomfortable now as it is back then, especially with all these lights on you guys, because it just feels, I was getting really uncomfortable. Like, I'm sweating for you guys.
To embody a character of a woman who is so stoic and mostly still all the time, and then wrapped in a corset, is like a fight within myself.
Wow.
So and it's very exciting, you know, I walk through, I give myself permission in order to honor her, to walk through all of her anger and her pain and her sadness and her hope that she can come to a resolution with her brother to stop this nonsense because she's afraid of for her children.
Right.
You know, the threat that was brought to George Jr., 11 years old, who loves books, maybe the next W.E.D. Du Bois. You know, maybe he's that next thinker that can help excel our world, our society. But then to have it thwarted by this my younger brother, who is just so bold and boisterous and confident and very, very talented through boxing, just seems crushing and scary, very scary. So she's afraid. She's afraid for her children. She's afraid of the outcome of this. She's very aware of cause and effect. Mm-hmm. Where her younger brother, who's, you know, tall, handsome, talented, isn't, and he has no fear. And she's definitely envious of that. But she just wants the best for her family. And I think, and I always say this, but I think that in our lives, we all have that one family member or that person in our past that has tried to pull us back for fear, you know, for concern in a loving way.
Right.
But absolute concern. Don't you talk to that person. You know, don't you do that. Don't you do this. Because they just don't understand.
Right.
You know, don't win this fight. It doesn't have to be you. There are other people that can do this, but it can't. It doesn't have to affect our family.
Don't make the waves that'll drown us.
Don't make the waves that'll drown us. And that's her biggest fear. And so the corset, the dress. She's, you know, she's
restricted.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, constricted.
I was like,
he helps me along. So the constriction that the actress is dealing with within the character, I think, perfectly supports what she's going through.
I just also think it has a lot to say about women's roles in that society as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if this play doesn't just hit on the racial aspects, I think a lot of it is the women versus men, where men get to be the bravado, but women have to fear for the family and the children, and women have to be themselves constricted while the men get to hang out and be free and, you know, wear comfortable clothes.
Right. But then in the storyline, you think, well, Nina shows up because maybe in my, you know, creating of the character, I'm the only one that could probably pull him down.
Right. You're the only one who could talk some sense into him.
So I have to drive I have to take that train in the back, you know, 3 or 4 hours to travel to tell him, hey, this is what's going on. You can't just got out of church and here I am to tell you this is what happened and this is what's happening in your family.
Right.
You know.
I think it's just such a fantastic and fascinating play. And that end scene, which I'm not going to give away, sent legitimate chills through my body. You have to see it because it just, you don't expect it. It's just a part of it that you just don't expect, but it's such a reality for so many people in history that you need to kind of be there to be reminded of it. It's, you know, to tie into not losing the history of what the struggles of everybody that have gone through in America, you know, specifically African Americans getting the freedoms that they have. But also, you know, when we talked about, we had Anne Frank the play came here last year, and you hear more and more about how Poland's like, no, we don't want anybody to talk about, you know, the Holocaust. Sorry, we don't want to bring it up. So the only people you have that are able to continue to tell the history is not just the history books, but the oratorial part of it where they're telling the stories.
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword because one of the reasons, like, so many people, especially people of color, want to get past, like, things of oppression is if oppression didn't keep showing up.
Correct.
You know? It's like that, just that thing where you're just like, we could get past this if you just didn't stop bringing it back up over. Like, it just keeps, it's relevant now because it is so ingrained in American society to be talked about when it comes to how the future of this country is going to go.
It's been 100 years since this story of a boxer took place, and yet it's still so relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, it's sad, but it's also what I think is inspiring to say, don't let this continue to happen. It's just one of those reminders. We have to keep telling the story until we don't have to tell it anymore. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like, which is why I really enjoyed it. And you know what I have to ask, because I noticed a difference in the audience that was attending this play at Jiva than the standard audience, you know, which is a lot of older folks with the subscriptions. There was a younger aspect to this audience when I went, and it was kind of like, oh, you could hear them like in the back chatting and, you know, being so ingrained in the play and like kind of yelling and whooping along with, you know, with Jay as he was maneuvering through everything and, you know, gaining the bot, getting that fight, even though he's literally set up to lose money completely. It's a lose-lose for him if he loses, and it's still a win-loss, you know, the way that it's set up. But did you notice that is there a difference between the audiences at Ithaca versus Rochester? And you can be completely frank, and we can cut it off if we need to, but I'm a little curious myself.
I plead the Fifth Amendment. No. I don't think so. I think...
I think physically
the audience feels further away simply because they are.
Oh, okay.
You know, so there is a level of intimacy. It's actually interesting, though. It still feels intimate.
Yeah.
But just in kitchen, they were closer. And mm-hmm. they were
oh, three quarters.
Which we also had to restage for this space, which it took a while. Yeah. But I guess... If you're talking about like how different the audiences were, I would say that we definitely had more younger kids here in this place, which I think is also a testament because of Daz, because Daz has a lot of friends who he grew up with
who are from Rochester.
He's a star.
He's a rock star.
Yeah, so Daz he's like he's got his family and he's got his friends and he's got his teachers and they bring their students and stuff like that, and I feel like that is very, very important. We wanted to have more kids, and we have a student matinee next Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday. And I think it's to be a testament. I think this story is very strong, and I feel like I wish that we could get more younger people into see the show. That I think it would be very strong for them.
I think a lot of people, a lot of the younger audiences, and you know, would be very keen to hearing it as well. Yeah. But I really enjoyed it. How did you, I know, Jamal, you said that you had done, you know, kind of were watching a documentary, but how did you guys prepare for these characters? I mean, this is the second, because it's a co-production with the Kitchen and Kitchen Theater in Ithaca. So kind of, you know, how has it evolved for you? Where did you begin? How do you even begin? Did you just start working out more?
Definitely. I wish the other two actors, Sean Meehan and Alex Thomas.
You go first.
I wish they were here. They're equally talented. Wish they were here. Please go first.
Sean Meehan had to grow that mustache, right?
Yes, he did. Yes, under chagrin. His girlfriend's
here. He was very excited about it. His girlfriend was not
like,
very excited about it.
Definitely not.
I just love the handlebar mustaches. I think they're fantastic.
He's fantastic.
And that really, I'm like, oh, I am transported now because I'm either at a brewery with a hipster brewmaster or I'm in the
1900s. Yeah. He and Alex, they have the wraps around the armbands. Mm-hmm. I love that kind of. Yeah,
see, I'm with you on this one. I am too. I'm just like, oh, I wish I were a dude and could wear that again.
When things scare you, you have to lean in and attack those things that scare you. And, mm-hmm. and Nina's character scared me. I feel that the only way that she would be able to work is if she really just went for all of those dramatic moments, raw, seemingly, I don't want to say ugly, but just, you know, ugly cry like moments.
Yeah.
You know, in order to match the urgency or to support the urgency of what she's going through. I have this thing that I do that I'll blow up the words really big, and mm-hmm. I have a spin bike at home, and so I will clearly not as effective, but I will pedal and read the script or read, you know, my scenes over and over again while I pedal. Which is also very helpful, walking through each of the periods, exclamation points, punctuation. Walking through.
So I walk
through the beats, walk through the punctuation, mm-hmm. Just to make sure that I'm not missing any of the intentions and any of the dramatic moments for the character.
Right.
So that's. Was my work.
Mm-hmm. I did the same thing, but I hate talking about it. I don't hate talking about it.
It's just hard to talk about.
It's just truth. So I was out on tour with the national tour of the Color Purple with with someone that Lisa actually mentors, Makai. Makai Lee is great. He's a wonderful person.
Super talented.
He's super talented. And I auditioned for this show in, I think, September, like early September. And I got cast. And then around October when we closed it, I went back to the city. I started doing temp work. And I was working for a catering event, and I fell down and fractured my kneecap, my left kneecap.
Horrible.
That, with like 3 months to spare, made me like think, oh, I might have a problem with this show. So I had 2 months to heal with the brace on. I had atrophy in my left leg, went really, really small. And then I had 6 weeks of physical therapy before the first day of rehearsal. And I'd been given some tips on how to get my leg muscles back up. So this entire process for me, besides just doing the usual like, memorization work and beat work and trying to figure out moments as well as historical significance of him, of Jack Johnson and what to keep for Jay and what not to keep. I was just trying to go through pain.
Yeah.
Pain is like my friend now because every day was hard. Without having to, I'm always been in very good shape. I think I do go to the gym very regularly, but with this, I wasn't able to go.
Right.
I wasn't able to walk around. In New York City, like, you
That's
have an injury like
move.
That, it sucks. It really sucked. Mm-hmm. We were going through, like, boxing training and, like, hitting the bag. And there were times when my muscles here hadn't developed because I hadn't been there. I couldn't practice.
On your wrist?
Yeah. And so my wrist, like, got injured, and then my right shoulder went out a little bit, and then my left leg was still painful every day. And so pain was just like my thing. I just had to like get through it. And there are times when it still gets hard on my left leg to do this show, but it's not where it once was. Like, my body is a lot stronger now, and I'm really grateful to go through it, but like, it sucked for a long time.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I've
really
broken
did.
Both my ankles. Oh. I know. Whoa. I feel your pain. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Not at the same time. You know.
I don't know if that's...
I don't know if it's better or worse.
Yeah, I think that's
I don't know
worse.
Either.
It's the same
I don't
time.
Know.
If you had done it at the same time, they would have healed at the same time.
Yeah, no. There was a 7-year difference, but it was...
Wow.
So I feel your... I empathize with the pain of rehabbing just to even try to feel any sort of sense of normalcy, and then you have to... move into this whole new character that, and I'm gonna tell you, I did not notice if there was any sort of affliction to you during the play because Jay does not hold back on. I was thinking as an audience member, those are some really high jumps, and man, he's really slamming his feet down, and I have really bad knees. I was like, I could not handle that, and man, he must be in really good shape.
Like,
so
I say
well, the
that
power
for
of adrenaline.
Show,
I mean, it's
I'm
really.
Like, I'm gonna go home.
I'm gonna take some
get some ice. Give me a drink. Someone's got any alcohol or some bourbon somewhere? But no, it gets. I will say that every show does get easier, and. I have noticed that my left leg is getting bigger. It's still not the same size as my right leg. Mm-hmm. And the muscles are still getting there. Working around with physical therapy, it just helps. But it's a process that will take a long time to get fully the same way.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd rather... it's been a blessing to do this show. I'd rather go through the pain of doing this show to serve people that I think it is serving very well than not do it at all. So it's still been a blessing to do, even if it's painful.
It's just a blessing.
Yeah.
Overall blessing.
Yeah. You're a blessing.
Okay.
Well, guys, we're going to have to wrap it up. Is there anything that you would want the audience to take away from this play before we get going on this? Things that you think they should leave with?
Okay. Even if you're not able to see this show because you're out of town, you should fix that as soon as possible. But just remember... you do not have to do anything to be worth existence. You're just worthy.
Oh, I like that.
You're worthy. You are worthy. You have the gifts and the tools that you need in order to succeed in the world, in your world. You should stay on your path. You should work very hard. You should stay focused. Continue educating yourself. The person to the right or to the left of you are the same as you. No one is better than the other person. And if we can all just catch up with each other and realize that, that'd be a great thing.
Amen. Amen. Thank you guys so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You gotta go see The Royale. It is on stage, on the Fielding stage, until April 28th. Get your tickets at jivatheater.org. And Jamal and Lisa, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure having you on Rochester Peace Theater. And until next time, toodles.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.